Welcome to Firstline. My name is Aubrey Ann Jackson, and I am a PGY1 psychiatry resident physician. In this podcast, we discuss whole person health and wellness through an osteopathic lens, holistically addressing the body, mind, and spirit. We also discuss topics important to medical trainees, including pre-med students, medical students, and residents. Thanks for joining me. Hello, everyone. This episode is all about interviews for residency programs. So right now, it's the start of interview season. Some of you may have even started interviewing already, but most of you have begun to receive interview invites and are able to schedule those interviews. So I wanted to get this episode out in a timely manner so that it can help all of you as you begin the interview season. And if you're listening to this as a med student or even a pre-med student before applying, this will still be helpful because you can know what to start thinking about, and maybe you are reminded of different experiences that you should pursue before becoming an applicant. So I first want to start talking about what I think is the most important part of interviews. And this is to pick something that you are passionate about that is moderately unique to you. So what I mean by this is something that the interviewers will remember you for. And this should be something that you've mentioned in your personal statements and something that was in your general application. So it's a common theme that continues even during your interview process. So this could be something like a subspecialty that they'll know you as the applicant that's interested in internal medicine and then becoming a cardiologist. Or it could be something like, oh, this is the applicant that's interested in community psychiatry. This could be even something like a hobby, like, oh, this is the applicant who has a YouTube channel and they talk about family medicine on their YouTube channel. So it could be a range of things. It could also be a passion for medical education. This is the applicant who wants to become a program director, wants to teach medical students. Or this is someone who's interested in advocacy. This is someone interested in research. And if you're going to choose research, make sure it's pretty specific with what you want to research instead of very generic, being that you want to do research. You're going to get a lot of follow-up questions based off of whatever theme you choose. Or this is someone that's really interested in public health and doing more outside the clinic to help their patients. So it may be that you're passionate about a few things, but I would choose one to really focus on and make sure that it comes across in the interview pretty clearly. And don't pick something that wasn't mentioned at all in your personal statement or your application, because this is going to come across as inauthentic, that all of a sudden you're super interested in something like pulmonology and you've never had a pulmonology rotation, you never mentioned an interest in it in your personal statement, you've never been involved in an interest group in medical school. So you want to make sure that it makes sense with you as an applicant as a whole. And you also don't want to choose different interests based off of who you're interviewing with, because that comes across as inauthentic too. You need to know that interviewers are going to talk about you afterwards, and they should have gotten the same impression of you, and the theme that you have throughout your interviews needs to be consistent. In addition to a sort of theme that, for the most part, is usually going to be educational in nature, it's going to be a specific interest within medicine. You need to be prepared to talk the majority of your interview about your hobbies and who you are outside of medicine. This is because interviewers are typically faculty with the program or the program directors themselves. they want to make sure you're a good fit for the program, and they want to know more about you as a person outside of academics. They want to know if you're someone they want to work with on a daily basis and someone they can get along with. So that's why a lot of interviewers will ask about hobbies. This means that you want to prepare about 2 minutes of content that you can use to elaborate on each of the hobbies that you list in ERAS. So for many of you, that's going to be one hobby that you chose as one of your 10 experiences. Some people chose to talk about several hobbies as one of their experiences and just list a few of them. So for each one, you would want about 2 minutes worth of things to talk about each one. And if you didn't include a hobby on ERAS, you need to choose a few that you can talk about. I think it helps to have a version of your answer about 1 minute in your initial answer so that you then have another minute of material that you can elaborate on if they ask follow-up questions. But if you have something that you cannot think about enough things to talk about for 2 minutes, then it's probably something that you shouldn't have listed on your ERAS application. If it's something that is not in your ERAS application, that means that it's something that you wouldn't want to bring up. If you're not able to elaborate on it, it's probably not a good choice of hobby. Now, I want to share a few common questions that you'll probably encounter on the interview trail. So one is about board exams, the USMLE and COMLEX exams. So no matter what your score is, programs are likely going to ask you questions about how you prepared for the exams and what you thought about the outcome of the exams. So that goes to if you scored very well on your exams versus if you struggled. You'll probably get those questions. Even if you have a pretty average score for your specialty, you might get these questions as well. If you had low scores, and I would define that as less than the average for your specialty, it's important to share a positive story about what you learned from that experience and how you adapted since you received those scores. So previously, applicants could improve their application after doing poorly on level 1 or step 1 by doing fantastic on level 2 or step 2, but this can't be done anymore with the new pass-fail system. Instead, you'll just have that single score that happens to be a very recent score, so you probably didn't have much time to adapt from that. But try to think of something to say. I'd caution against blaming a personal issue for distracting you from performing your best. Instead, it's better to take ownership for the score and share any new learning strategies you've recently developed that you're excited to use into fourth year and into residency. Kind of have that future-oriented mindset about the score instead of dwelling on the past. I was fortunate enough to have high enough scores that interviewers congratulated me during interviews, but they would still ask questions mostly about how I prepared and also what I struggled with in medical school. And this was probably because they wanted to see if I would be humble and self-reflective enough to name something that I struggled with. Instead of just saying, nope, I did well in medical school and I didn't have any issues. So there are two types of people that do well on exams, those who work hard and those who are just good test takers. I do consider myself to be a good test taker, but programs really want to hear instead about how you're a hard worker and how you credit that to your scores. They want to know that you'll work hard in their program too. So never say like, oh, I'm just good at taking tests. Always say, I worked really hard. If you do have high scores, try to name something that you struggled with and how you did better and you were able to succeed and get those high scores. That shows a little bit more self-reflection than just saying that it came naturally to you. Another common question you'll get is to discuss your weakness. And this is also a very challenging question. So it's tricky because you don't want to name something that is actually a red flag, but you also don't want to give a non-answer to this. Something to consider is saying, I'm always second-guessing myself even though I always do my best. And I just need to develop enough confidence because I a lot of times know the answers to things, but I don't have enough confidence to actually say them out loud when working as a team. That's something that is reasonable to have a problem with as a fourth year medical student, and it shows that you're humble enough to know that there's so much more to learn, but that you do know some things and that you just have to work on balancing that. Kind of similar to that is saying I'm meticulous and check my work often, but that makes me work a little bit slower and it takes longer for me to accomplish tasks and see patients. That's something that, again, is reasonable to have an issue with as a fourth year student, but something that you can absolutely develop more as an intern. Do not use the word perfectionist, because that just comes across as that you don't really have any flaws and that you just hold yourself to a higher standard. Use something that you can actually improve upon. And don't focus on anxiety or self-esteem too much here, because that can actually be a red flag. Even if it is something that is a reality to you, programs don't really want to hear that you often struggle with anxiety or that you have low self-esteem, because that's something that is much harder to work on. And some of the other things I mentioned. Another thing to consider is that you can say that you struggle with stressing about patients who are no longer under your care. This shows true empathy, that you do care about your patients, and it's reasonable to have this problem as a fourth year student as well. But it also realistically reflects on something that you have to work on as an intern, which is setting healthy boundaries with not taking your work home with you. I am now providing personalized assistance specifically to medical students. I can help with editing your CV for away rotations or other opportunities. I can aid in revisions for your personal statement, and I can help edit your ERAS application. I will catch your grammar and style mistakes and also provide feedback on content revision so you can craft documents that make you more competitive. There are so many expensive services out there that charge hundreds to thousands of dollars on reviews, which is why I'm offering a much more affordable service with different price packages based on your needs. While many services out there are led by staff members who are years to decades removed from their experience as medical students, I'm uniquely positioned to help you as someone who has been through this process recently and as someone with professional writing and editing experience. Use the link in this episode description to learn more about the services I offer for individualized help.
So another thing I want to talk about is a little bit more of the logistics of interviewing. So one thing that applicants think a lot about is where to do their interviews and what to have in the background. So first things first with this, I would not recommend using the blurred background feature because it can be so distracting. It often will warp your face or your hairline as you move in your seat, which is inevitable that you're not going to stay completely still. And this can just be very distracting. So I would instead use a plain color in the background. I just used a white wall for all of my interviews, and that way the focus was really on me, not a distracting background or a blurred background that was distracting. Some applicants do have either a colored wall in the background, or they'll purposely be in front of a bookshelf or artwork and even have very clearly to see something that connects to one of their hobbies. I think that can be done tastefully, but you really want to have it tied with your hobbies, not your academic achievement. So I would not have diplomas in the background. I would not have trophies or awards in the background. I think that can come across as very snobbish. But something related to your hobbies might be helpful, like a surfboard if you like to surf, or plants if you like gardening. I have seen some people have their own artwork in the background. This can be great because the interviewer can ask you about that hobby, like, oh, did you paint that? I have seen this backfire that some people, I've seen several applicants of my fellow applicants have artwork in their background. And when an interviewer asks about it, they say, oh, I just like how it looked. It's not anything that I did myself. I just bought it because I think it looks cool. And they weren't able to elaborate any further. So I think it really only comes across well if you use artwork that you've personally created, whether it's a painting or a drawing. And if you are going to use artwork that you did not create, I think it needs to have some sort of significance for you because you need to expect that people are going to ask you about it. Again, that's just like the hobbies. Make sure it's something you can elaborate up to 2 minutes on and have a 1 minute short answer prepared. And then you might be worried about what to wear. So it's important to dress professional for interviews, even if you're interviewing from home and it's done virtually. So for women, this means a blouse and a blazer. It doesn't really matter what you're wearing for pants because they probably won't be able to see it if you're interviewing virtually. For men, this means a dress shirt with a jacket. And I would say that you really want to look similar to your ERAS picture because the purpose of the ERAS picture is to identify you after the interview to remind the interviewers of which applicant you were so that they can recall more of your conversation when they're discussing applicants. So the ERAS photo is not for the purpose of programs being shallow and only giving interviews for attractive applicants. It's really for that identification purpose. So you don't want to change your look too much from your ERAS photo. Certainly don't want to dye your hair, and you should probably keep a similar length hair. So I'm hoping that there are none of you that had super long hair in your ERAS photo and then decided to get a pixie cut, because you're going to look drastically different. But it might help if you are a woman and you had your hair up in your ERAS photo to also have your hair up in interviews. And then for men, if you had facial hair in your ERAS photo, it might be good to also have facial hair in your interview as well. Then there comes the question of makeup for women. So I personally went for a more natural look that probably didn't look like I was obviously wearing makeup. Some mascara and concealer, but you can also probably do some eyeliner and maybe some natural color eyeshadow, maybe some blush and bronzer, but not overdoing any of that. I'd probably stay away from lipstick, but you could probably do a lip gloss or a like tinted lip balm. And for glasses versus no glasses, I've seen research that in general, people who interview with glasses do better. I had my glasses on in my ERAS photo, but I actually decided not to wear glasses for any of my interviews. And this is really just because I was using a ring light because there was pretty poor lighting in the room that I was interviewing in. And the ring light would reflect off of my glasses with a really obnoxious glare, and you could see the ring light in the reflection of my glasses. So I decided not to wear glasses for any of my interviews. Also, something to think about is when to schedule your interviews during the interview season. I think personally, after having gone through it last year, I think it's always best to space out your interviews as much as you can. I don't think it's a good idea to cram all of your interviews into the first month of interview season and then just have nothing going on until March. I think you can easily get fatigued when you have interviewers multiple days in a row. I certainly had weeks where I had an interview every day of the week. But sometimes you don't really have this option to space them apart, so I would at least try to have a day in between each of the interviews if you can. And there's really no evidence that interviewing earlier in the season is better than interviewing later in the season. There might be some correlation, but this is probably because if you're interviewing later in the season, it might be because you were on the wait list and then you were taking off the wait list. So you weren't really in that program's first batch of applicants that they really wanted to interview. And then there's the question of, well, you're fresh in their mind for rank lists, but typically programs will be working on the rank list throughout the season. They usually don't just come together and talk about all of the applicants from the whole season in early March or late February. They are consistently evaluating applicants and they try to keep it as fair as possible. So I don't think that's necessarily a good strategy. So that's why I recommend just spacing out those interviews and just scheduling them based off of your own availability and when works for you. I think many applicants are still doing sub-Is in October and November, even December. So it might not be a good look if you're taking so much time off of that sub-I to interview with other programs. So that's why if you have one of those later sub-Is, it's good to schedule them when you're done those sub-Is or to minimize the number of interviews you're taking during that sub-I. So I'm pretty sure for the foreseeable future, most programs are in most specialties are going to be interviewing virtually. So this means you really need to make sure that your computer is charged and working and you have Zoom and Microsoft Teams and Thalamus all downloaded and ready to go. You always want to log in at least 15 minutes before your interview day starts. And be ready to have small talk with the program coordinators between interview sessions if there's any kind of large group before you break out into your individual interviews, because the program coordinator is a part of the interview day, so and they can let the program director and faculty know how you are as a regular person outside of the structured interview. So make sure that you're friendly and pleasant. So make sure you're professional throughout the day. And as a current resident now, I will say that if a program is willing to have you spend time with current residents and they say that it has nothing to do with how you will be ranked, then take advantage of that time. When they do that, they are specifically putting you with residents who are not a part of the admissions process, so you can be very open about the questions that you want to ask. So ask those questions. So for me last year, I was trying to get pregnant during my fourth year and I found out that I was pregnant in early December. So that was before all of my interviews were done. So I made sure that I asked every program to the residents, about their leave policy and if any residents had children during residency and how their program supported them. And I kind of paired this with a question about how the program handles sick days and if there's a death in the family, so that it didn't seem obvious that I was planning to get pregnant or currently pregnant. But that's something that's really important to ask if that is important to you. But other people will have things that are important to them. So make sure you're asking those questions. If you need to ask about benefits, don't be shy about asking that. If you want to ask about work hours, don't be shy asking about that. That's why they have that put in place, because they want you to rank the program based off of how you actually want to be there. And so you have to ask the questions that are important to you in order to make that educated decision. So I will definitely have an episode later on how to form your match list. And if you reach out with questions that you have about interviewing and the interview process, maybe I'll have a part two of this. because I feel like there's so much more that I can talk about with interviews, but I really want it to be helpful. But I at least wanted to get this episode out with the most important things that I think that all applicants should know. So I hope this was helpful, and I'll talk to you next week.
View the show notes for additional information about this episode and access the link to FirstLine's website. Don't forget to follow or subscribe to FirstLine on your favorite podcast app to hear a new episode every Monday. Thanks for listening.